Hey, I'm Kelly Corrigan, and wondering is pretty much my favorite pastime. Like, I wonder, does everything happen for a reason? Can we really trust our gut? And how might what we don't know actually be hurting us quite a lot? This week, with stand-up comic, recovering alcoholic, Lutheran minister, best-selling author, and top podcaster Nadia Boltz-Weber, I'm reconsidering the wisdom of that most popular admonition, never give up. Welcome to Kelly Corrigan Wonders, a place for people who like to laugh while they think and find it useful to look at ourselves and our weird ways in the hopes that knowing more and feeling more will help us do more and be better. We'll be right back with Nadia Boltz-Weber. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states and situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Hi, welcome back. I'm Kelly Corrigan. I'm a writer who is rather elaborately dodging an unfinished manuscript by starting this conversation series. The question I'm asking this month is what conventional wisdom turns out to be not that wise after all, and possibly even a little dangerous. Last week, we wondered about the wisdom of everything happens for a reason with my friend Kate Bowler. This week, I'm testing the case for never give up, words famously attributed to Churchill and Vince Lombardi and mothers everywhere, this one included, who like to claim, quote, we don't quit things in this family. Never give up feels so right. It's a favorite of Instagram art and coffee mugs, sports huddles, and staff meetings. I spent some time reading around on Medium, my production partner for this series, and the collective jury is out. There were many inspired odes to grit and the last mile, but there was also a whole collection of celebratory posts on the, quote, sheer transcendent joy of quitting. I wonder if giving up doesn't involve a pretty complex set of intellectual and emotional moves. So to get my head around it, I asked my newsletter pen pals about their experiences with giving up. What are they beating themselves up for quitting? Veterinary school, creative writing, playing a musical instrument. What do they regret not quitting? Law school, college football, and more than a few friendships. There were a few things they wish they had given up sooner. Fertility treatments, drinking, bad marriages, and others they were elated to have quit. Caring what people think, Bible study, organized religion, pretending to be straight, the GPA race, the rat race, toxic positivity, and auditioning. Some of them put down books if they don't like them after 50 pages, but more make themselves finish. My friend Mary said, never is a big word. Jessica, an entrepreneur friend, says quit has become a four-letter word. I wondered what my friend Nadia might have to say about giving up. As I said at the top, Nadia Boltz-Weber is a minister and a podcaster. She's also got a dozen tattoos, two teenagers, and three New York Times bestsellers to her name. She's very tall, very funny, very blunt. She's been profiled in The New Yorker and The Atlantic, but perhaps her greatest achievement is that she watched the entire Game of Thrones series, 63 hours of sex and murder in 2 weeks. I asked her to talk to me because she's good at nuance and challenging assumptions. She's down on vapid optimism. And her most common prayer is, God, please help me not to be an asshole. Hey. Thanks for coming.
Hey, yeah, thanks.
So I have a few quick questions at the top to sort of ease our way into the idea of quitting. Do you have a go-to mantra for hard times?
Recently, I've been just thinking a lot about when I was in labor, the thing that got me through 44 hours of labor was I would say every woman who's ever given birth to a child has experienced this, even though it feels so ridiculous and out of control and like can't survive it. So I've been reaching back a lot and going, we're not the only human beings to ever live through a pandemic. You know?
What's something your mom always said to you?
Life's not fair.
What's your last big failure, like a time that you quit?
My last book did not do as well as the previous book. My first three books, the subsequent book did better than the previous one for three in a row. And then my fourth one, it didn't happen. And not only did it not do as well, it didn't do as well by about half, which is a lot, right? When I learned that, of course, I was like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. I poured myself into this. But pretty quickly after that, I went, oh my God, I win. It felt like I can get off the ride now. It felt like I don't have to keep doing this because it's this weird pressure of success is that it only lasts for a few minutes. And then it can feel like my previous successes are always an accusation against my current efforts. And so for the first time in, 12 years, I'm not under contract to write a book. I quit writing books, not forever, but until I feel like it again.
I am very familiar with this as I have been under contract for 5 years on a book that I still can't finish.
Yeah.
What's something that took you way too long to quit?
I think my friends would answer that I stayed married for a very long time when I was not in a happy marriage. Mm. But I answer it differently, that my marriage was not bad enough to leave it while my children were young. And I think it's not maybe the most feminist conversation to have, but there are times in our lives for sacrifice. That's not a popular notion because it's been weaponized against women. So then we don't see any virtue in that at all, I think. But for me, keeping the unit together and the cost being me being somewhat unsatisfied and unhappy and just very, very lonely, it was the right choice for me.
Let's get into the conversation about never give up. It's easy to see the appeal, especially as Americans, sure, of this persistent, relentless pursuit of some end.
Right.
And that is probably the dominant mythology, right? That sticking to it is in and of itself a virtue. Mm-hmm. But I also think that sticking to it can often go too far. So can you sort of help me identify like the pros and cons of giving up?
I always think who is benefiting and who is being harmed by a certain teaching? I always am sort of struggling with that. If the teaching is never give up and that is in some way keeping somebody in a subjugated position, then that's an issue, right?
Sometimes it seems like deep success requires the odyssey. It requires that you had moments of doubt, that you went to the bottom of the valley,
that
you were flat out.
Yeah.
And sometimes if your story is hitting some of those beats, it might even be validating, oh, this is it. This is exactly how it goes. I know this part where the hero is down on his luck and Steve Jobs is fired from Apple and then he has to come back. But then you have Theranos and then you have Solyndra and then you have Lance Armstrong.
Some of this success-driven attainment culture that we have in America can create situations where somebody's spinning their wheels because they irrationally have this dream that they're not going to give up on.
That took me to the people who die on Mount Everest. Just because you signed up, did all the paperwork, and found a Sherpa and bought some gear doesn't mean that you should be on that mountain. And we're going to have to make it okay and even admirable that people turn back.
Totally.
When you start seeing the signs that something is not going to come together safely for you or for others, we have to make that a positive story.
It's a virtue.
Yeah, we're all applauding like mad because you turned back and saved your life or saved somebody else's life. We never promote those stories.
And they are just relentless in their pursuit, and they're not going to give up on their dreams because they watched a documentary, and he kept going, and they're going to keep going, and everyone in their life is looking at them you're irrational. You are not helping yourself. And I wish I knew what the difference was between those two things. And I don't.
Yeah.
I think about, who was it? A comic who was talking about just criticizing this participation trophy culture that we have with children and telling him, you can be anything. And he goes, no. You could be anything you're good at if they're hiring. Right. And you're like, you're a pretty good guitar player, but you're not Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
You know, you're not of that level.
It's interesting. I made a list of all the things I've given up on. So I've given up on all sports. I've given up on wearing heels. I've given up trying to get my kids to clean up their rooms.
I will never give up on presenting Christianity and Christian thought in a really liberating way. I'll never give up on that. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who wish I would because they're so offended by the way I present Christian thinking that they're like, you know, you're a heretic. Why are you still doing this? But I think it's been used so effectively for domination that's a reason for me to never give up on presenting it for liberation instead.
I read this interesting thing about giving up and sticking to it. And a thing that they said, the healthiest way that it can happen is that you would swap one goal for another. So that you would decide that the goal is no longer so valid, which sets you free from a mental health disaster where you're thinking, I'm a quitter. And as Vince Lombardi said, quitters never win and winners never quit. That's a tough reality to be living under if you're trying to make sane decisions about what to pursue and what not to pursue.
Well, also, why do we have to win all the time? I don't understand why that's a goal either.
I totally agree. And I actually think there's a huge cultural correlation between sticking to it and winning and quitting and losing. I think it's super dangerous.
I'm really interested recently in ambition.
Me too.
Like, how does ambition function? How does it function positively? How does it function negatively? How does it impact our lives? And how our ego is attached to that. And it's probably because in 2019, I was on 90 airplanes in 7 countries. I'll get on a stage, people start clapping. I haven't even said yet, right? I went from that to being in a 1,000-square-foot apartment.
Right.
Where I am not special. I have just been confronted with ego and ambition during the pandemic. Just given me this curiosity about, did these things creep up in my life in a way that I didn't even realize?
Mm-hmm.
Because I labeled them as something else. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting because I have a similar life where I'm flying around a lot, being treated nicely.
Yeah.
If you call that work, then it counts. It's virtuous. If you call it an amazing ego massage, then it's something else. It's not work.
Oh, Kelly, I didn't come here for this truth bullshit.
You've had a hard enough day. You don't need me giving you a big old truth bomb. You have kids and I have kids. And I think about the first time that Claire quit something. So we tried to foist piano playing on our children because we read that it helps with math and logical thinking. And we completely bought it hook, line, and sinker as if the only way for our kids to be successful thinkers in life was to play the piano. And Claire hated it. And she has a will that turns out to be greater than mine. And she quit. I'm not going to say exactly what I said to her, but it was something that pointed to low character. You can't quit.
Ouch. Yes.
Right? And then Georgia this summer was taking this organic chemistry online and she wanted to quit. And I thought, how am I supposed to parent through this moment? Because the default message is like, do not let your kids quit. And then also that kind of butts up against something that you were talking about in your podcast recently with a rabbi around cancel culture and forgiveness, which is if we are so flippantly coming to conclusion about who and what are deserving and what should be banished, as Shakespeare would say, then we could accidentally raise a generation of people who is really flippant about quitting, so to speak. How do you deal with it when your kids want to quit things?
Oh, well, my daughter just 3 days ago called and said, I don't know if I want to go back to school for her senior year if it's all online, because they canceled rowing and she rows crew. Mm. And she was actually supposed to be studying in Aberdeen, Scotland, and that was canceled. And so my whole thing with parenting is when my kids come to me, I have to have a shovel real handy so that I can get whatever my is about that issue or about them out of the way as quickly as possible so they don't have to step in my to get to me. And so I had to process my around, but that's going to cost us more money and stuff that was about me when she said she didn't want to go and get to maybe a deeper wisdom that I could maybe offer. But it took a lot of work in me to not be, you can't quit. You just have one more year. You're being selfish. And so I said, well, she's renting a house with her friend, their senior year. And I go, baby, the number of years in your life you can share a house for a year with your friends are so precious for you. I would love to live with my friends for a year in the house right now. You don't get to do that much. So if all you're getting out of that year is you're all doing class online, but you're living together, that's so much better than sharing my one-bedroom apartment and getting a job at Target. Because honestly, you'll likely have to do that anyway. Don't do it a year early.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> And on that note of brutal honesty, let's take a short break and I'll be right back with Nadia Boltz-Weber. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are just right for the role you've got. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. LinkedIn gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else, all the while making the process easy and intuitive. I mean, when you have that many quality candidates, hiring gets a lot easier. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So maybe you're 24 hours from finding your perfect next hire. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Kelly. That's linkedin.com/Kelly to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. The 10% Happier podcast has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? Hosted by Dan Harris, a journalist who had a panic attack on national television and then set out on a journey of transformation. He's now on a quest to help others also achieve peace and happiness. Every week, Dan talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity in wide-ranging conversations that explore topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. The interviews cover everyone from Brené Brown to Alexander Draymond to Sam Harris. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. Find 10% Happier wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey, this is Kelly Corrigan. Welcome back to my conversation with Nadia Boltz-Weber about if and when it is okay, or maybe more than okay, maybe essential to give up. And why we put ourselves through such torture in the name of persisting. The other thing is that those crazy clap lines where the applause-o-meter goes crazy, that kind of success fantasy trickles down. And then you think about somebody like Elizabeth Holmes or the Solyndra people or Lance Armstrong, where they'll positively corrupt themselves because they're buying into this man on an odyssey, many valleys, monsters, naysayers, people trying to take it away from you, and you have to just keep powering through, such that Solyndra, the solar panel company, which was out here in the Bay Area, they got to the point where they had 1,100 employees and they had spent $535 million before somebody sane was able to say, uncle, I give up.
Mm.
Have you had an occasion where you're reading the tea leaves and thinking, I gotta let go here?
Yeah, I mean, I did stand-up comedy for years, but then as soon as it was work, I stopped. I didn't have enough ambition. It was not like my dream. I literally stumbled upon it because it was cheaper than therapy. And I got paid. So when I got sober, it was harder to do just because I got a little more sort of mentally and emotionally healthy. And I was just not as goddamn funny anymore because I was not as miserable, honestly. I've had times where, so the thing I did not give up on in my life that I wanted to, and I'm really glad I didn't, was I started a church from scratch with a few hundred dollars and a mechanical pencil and my personality. This is all I had, right? And I stuck in it for 10 years, and now it's its own little thing. One of the things I'm the most proud of is that I was the founder of something, and it's doing quite well without me.
So was leaving it a big deal, or did you always intend to it fly on its own?
It was super important that I not f*** up by staying too long. And I started saying early on, at some point, this church is going to need a pastor with a different set of skills than I have. And I hope that we all come to that conclusion about the same time, ideally.
Yeah, you know, you know? I started something called Notes and Words, and it was 10 years old last year. Mm. And it's writers and musicians on stage together for Children's Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's an annual concert, and 2,000 people go. And the last one, we raised $3.3 million in a night. So super fun, super successful. It took me a really long time, but I just quit.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I quit in the exact same way that you let go of your church, which is to say, if children's hospitals are the kind of thing where the donors outgrow it over time, I said when I left, you need somebody who has a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 2-year-old, and they can run it out for the next 10 years. And I hope that it continues, but there is a feeling of abandonment, no?
Oh, yeah, there was a lot that was very difficult for me with walking away, but it was so important to me that I do it well and that I do it at the right time.
Well, that gets to this very important idea, I think, which is that there's a difference between giving up and letting go.
Okay.
And yeah. I think it's way more than semantics. I was thinking about some of the most gut-wrenching giving ups that I know. And then as soon as I changed the words to letting go, it felt better.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who, Liz Lotz, who died after 7 years of ovarian cancer treatments that were just excruciating. Like, she did 88 rounds of chemotherapy. And 6 years and 9 months into it, she kind of whispered to me over the phone, like, I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. And it was like, you're allowed to let go. You do not have to stay here and do this. And then I had a friend who had fertility treatments for almost 7 years, and she let go and switched gears and went towards adoption.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend who was married to a guy who got hooked on meth.
Mm.
And she tried and tried and tried, and he gave up for 90 days. Then he'd come home, and then he'd fall away again and disappear, and then he'd come back. Anyway, she finally said, I have to let you go. Like, if I keep holding on to you, we're both going to drown.
Yeah.
And so I think about with my girls, I would just die if they didn't have a way to figure out what to let go of and yeah. what to keep, you know, what to turn your back on and what to commit to. It's really thorny, but never give up is not the answer. I mean, that is not a fair mantra.
I love that distinction. There's a difference between giving up feels like a failure and letting go feels like just a choice to pivot in another direction.
There's so much self-awareness baked into letting go. It seems like a thing you would do after a particularly good inventory, your emotions around something to say, I am finished.
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow would call it conscious uncoupling.
I did roll my eyes when I read that, but it is this idea. I did hear someone else say, doesn't Glennon Doyle say that her marriage was finished?
Yes, and I love that. See, this is the thing that really disturbs me. You talked about counselors saying people don't want to get divorced because it would feel like a failure. Well, why can't it just be that a marriage is done? Like you said, it served me for this period. I think it's really disadvantageous for us to continue to see marriages ending as a failure when it actually is A, extremely common, and B, often such a better choice than 45, 50 years of misery. Why is it that staying in a marriage in which neither of you are flourishing and you just live in this sort of low-level resentment of the other person, but you didn't give up, why the f*** is that successful?
Right.
You know, instead of going, I honor you for what you brought to my life, for these children we had, and we are going to actually bless each other, to sort of go, I bless you in your departure and you being on another path now.
Well, that makes me want to ask the question that you said at the very top, which is, who does the story benefit?
Right.
Because that's if right. There's a story that's being promoted that success is marriage until death, and failure is divorce.
Yeah.
Who is telling that story? Who's supporting that story? And why?
Yeah. And who's being harmed by that story? Also, I would just argue there's so many kinds of death, you know? I mean, if you believe until death do you part, death shows up in a lot of ways, you know?
God, that's so interesting. Have you read Victoria Chang Obit? She's this beautiful poet. Ellen Bass turned me on to her, who's also a beautiful poet. It's a book called Obit. Every single page is a little teeny obituary for a different part of this person's life.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
I know.
Oh, man. Why don't we have a book of blessings for the end of a marriage to bless the other person?
Yeah, you know? So the end of a job.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Or the end of a pursuit. Like, this is the end of me trying to climb this mountain, and this is the end of me trying to force this project, and this is the end of me trying to make this house work, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
this
that's
is the
our
end
work.
Of me doing housework. Like, I need that blessing. I'm looking for that blessing.
So I'm going to say that it's our job to go out there and share stories of very smart letting go / giving up moments that are worthy of celebrating and emulating.
I have this image in my head from that film, The Mission.
Oh, I loved that. De Niro?
Robert De Niro has this huge net. He has to climb this cliff to get away from danger. And he has this huge net that's filled with pots and pans and his riches and his stuff. And him holding on to that is going to kill him. Somebody has to set him free from it. They have to cut those cords so that he can be free. If you think the goal is, I have to get to the top with this stuff, then you're going to be like, I can't give up, I can't give up. And so I guess I wonder with some of this stuff is we get attached to one thing because we aren't honest about what the real actual truth of the goal is. Because most times the goal is to have security, is to have safety, is to know we're loved, is to know that we're valued. I think sometimes if we're attached to something that we want to accomplish, what's really underneath it is going, am I valuable? Am I worthy of being seen? Am I worthy of love? And ultimately, that's what we want. So what we can do is to let go of the specificity of this goal. If we can have some kind of security in the fact that I still am worthy to be seen and worthy to be loved.
Well, this goes to shame. And I don't know if you've been called the nation's leading expert in shame, but your books and your podcast, The Confessional, are really about getting underneath shame and naming it and seeing it for what it is and then hopefully dismissing it or exercising it. But there's so much suffering, especially in marriages. So I was reading this thing that all these therapists say when long-suffering couples come to them, why are they staying in this horrible marriage? And number one is children, and number two is money. And then the therapists get together and they say, it's none of that. It's, I do not want to be seen as a failure. I have shame. If I have to walk around as a divorced person, I will feel ashamed of myself. So what have you been learning in the confessional with your guests about shame and getting to the root of that and getting rid of it faster?
Martin Luther talked about the importance of calling a thing what it is. And I feel like that's what I've always tried to do in my work. call a thing what it is. And so shame can be this great liar who tries to tell us who we are. And ultimately, it's like that character in Lord of the Rings that's whispering lies into the king's ear and the king is believing it and becoming this decrepit creature. That's how I picture shame. And once that whisperer is banished, that character comes alive in the way that they were intended to.
What I've said to the girls is, why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. And what are the opportunity costs? Mm. But just saying, why are you doing it? Mm. If you're really honest about the answer, can give you all the information you need. Because a huge thing that I think people are striving for that is unfortunate is consistency, like a linear narrative.
Yeah.
I had this great friend I was just on a walk with yesterday. She had a huge job at one company. She got recruited away to work for this world famous company. And she doesn't love it. She's been there for a year and a half. And she kind of wants to go back to the old company. But she's like, but you can't do that. You can't do that, right?
You can totally do that.
I think you can do that.
You can totally
do that. I say go for it. It's your life. These are your days.
Yeah.
The idea that her resume would read like that or that her trajectory would loop back like that doesn't feel right. You see it even with kids who they picked baseball over lacrosse as an 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. And then they don't like baseball anymore, but it's way too late to switch sports when they're in like 9th grade.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just wonder if there's in any way hope that this generation, the generation of your kids and my kids, is going to be more fluid in all kinds of ways than our generation.
I think one of the things that can be very sticky is that we're so attached to our idea of ourselves. You see this with baby boomers, for instance. Baby boomers were the first generation that grew up within something that was eventually termed youth culture. Youth culture didn't exist before that generation. They came up with an idea of themselves as young, which didn't exist as a sort of identity before that generation. And subsequently, I think that what's happened is it has become very difficult for that generation to let go of that idea that they're still the young, hip people, like that they get it. And so if you're talking about things being a little more fluid, I think one of the best things we can hope for is that we can hold our idea of ourselves a little more lightly. But what happens if I can make that adjustment is I can actually have curiosity.
Right.
It allows me to be curious. It allows me to learn maybe a little bit, to be a little more nimble in the way I move through the world.
You could lay a lot of guilt at the feet of perception. And our idea of how people are looking at us, talking about us, thinking about us, how your LinkedIn profile looks, or if your Instagram feed has an overarching narrative. But I think a note that we could take from younger people is it's all right to be all over the place. And it sort of makes me think about my father-in-law, who has a very strict sense of you take a job and 30 years later you retire.
That world doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's the issue.
Right.
Maybe the younger generation is not so attached to continuity in the way that we are.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be wonderful.
So maybe never give up is not something they struggle with quite as much. I don't know.
Maybe we're putting it on them. Wouldn't that be ironic?
Well, what do we not put on them would be the question.
Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Love you lots.
I mean, I'd want to be on the phone with you for an hour anyway, so might as well.
Might as well flip the record button on.
What the hell? Might as well. All right, sister.
All right. Talk to you soon. Okay, let's wrap things up. Here are my list of takeaways from the conversation around never give up. When in doubt, with all things, ask yourself who is benefiting and who is being harmed by a certain teaching. Just because you watched a documentary on mountain climbing doesn't mean you should pack for the Himalayas. It wouldn't be a terrible thing to celebrate stories of resetting with the same enthusiasm we typically reserve for stories of never giving up. Ambition can be a deceitful master. Know what your real goals are. You probably can't be absolutely anything you want to be, and that's really okay. Shame has no place in parenting. grit can easily morph into grind. Misery is not always a signal that you need to dig deeper. Some things end: marriages, careers, creative pursuits. It's possible to recast them from failed to complete. And finally, there's a difference between giving up and letting go. I want to thank Nadia Bolz-Weber. Thank you to Medium for production support. Kelly Corrigan Wonders is produced by Susan George and edited by Dean Kateri, and I love them both. Thank you for being a part of this conversation. Next week, we'll be back with writer and podcaster Danny Shapiro, and we'll be wondering about the wisdom of what you don't know can hurt you. Until then, let's hook up online. I'm at medium.com/@Kelly. Thanks, guys.